Lyme bacteria can function in a lot of different ways. So sometimes the infection can go into a dormant state. So maybe you have killed what is active and circulating, and now whatever little bacteria are still in there, they go into this dormant state and become these little cells that persist in your body, and they can live that way for a very long time. So you may find that, you know, 20, 30 years later, you go through something that alters your immune system, maybe childbirth or COVID or a car accident, and that trauma, that inflammation, hits your immune system, and now these persister cells become active again. So there is no perfect test to tell us that Lyme is 100% cleared, because you will always carry those antibodies. Your immune system will always have that memory, and so it can be very tricky.
Welcome to Functional Moms Podcast, lifestyle medicine for women over 40. Let's age on our own terms.
This episode is for you if you or your loved ones have been affected by Lyme's disease, or you are interested in prevention. The CDC most recently estimated that each year, approximately 476,000 people are diagnosed and treated for Lyme disease in the U.S.
Katie McManigal is a board-certified family nurse practitioner who specializes in Lyme disease and complex chronic conditions. She began her career as a neonatal intensive care unit RN. After suffering from unexplained health symptoms that turned out to be Lyme disease, Katie's mission and passion became helping those chronically sick regain their health, wellness, and happiness.
Katie has completed training with the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society and is a Lyme-liberated provider. She furthered her knowledge of functional and alternative medicine through the Institute of Functional Medicine and the American Academy of Anti-Aging.
Katie, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm excited to talk to you because I can really relate to your story. My 15-year-old son has had Lyme disease twice and ehrlichiosis infection from a tick once, and it was really difficult with the ehrlichiosis to get a diagnosis. My regular medical doctor was sending us to get tested for leukemia because his platelet count had dropped so low, and they were about to do a bone marrow biopsy, but we had a functional medicine doctor take a look at the blood work, and she thought, oh, this could be tick-borne illness. And then we got the ehrlichiosis diagnosis. And so that's when the conventional doctor said, oh, you know, that's another reason your platelets could be low. So it's just a prime example of maybe that doctors are just not thinking about tick-borne illness as being as common as maybe it really is. And so we know your story with Lyme, obviously, that you had difficulty getting a diagnosis as well. So we can't wait to hear you share today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. And that's, I mean, that's terrifying as a parent, right? It's like, as much as tick-borne illness is also devastating and scary. Imagine if we could just go there first for diagnosis rather than the terror of thinking that your child has cancer and having to go down that path, right? So yeah, that's very overwhelming.
Very overwhelming. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So is your son doing well now?
Yeah. Oh, he was fine after all that. I mean, this was actually quite a few years ago, but I always share the story with people because, and then in this area where we are in New Jersey, we just hear all the time people talking about, you know, that they didn't even know they had Lyme disease. So if you could share your story, we would love to hear like what happened.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I have had Lyme likely since I was a young child and had no idea. And it was this living with these symptoms throughout my life that I just kind of assumed were normal because I had nothing to compare that to. The anxiety, the fatigue, the pain, the brain fog. I mean, I remember at one point when I had met my husband and we were dating and I said to him, I said, you know how sometimes your skin just has like a burning sensation? And he was like, no, I don't. That's crazy. Like, that's not normal. So just these things that over time seemed to get worse and worse and worse. And, you know, in some ways I look back and I'm like, well, what a bummer that I wasn't diagnosed younger. But also I think if my symptoms were recognized to be a problem at that point, I would have ended up on a path that wouldn't have been healing. And so ultimately I think things worked out the way that they were supposed to. You know, I kind of had to, it was a grind to be able to get through nursing school and grad school and everything like that. But it was really when I was in grad school and I had a very allopathic background, very Western medicine. If you would tell me that I'd be in the shoes I'm in today, today, I never would have believed you. But it was this slow turning over of stones. It was kind of like, okay, well, I'm going to look at maybe changing my diet, and I'm going to look at healing my gut, and I'm going to read this book. And slowly the wheels started to turn, and I started to look at things around me. I was a RN in the NICU at a children's hospital in Chicago, and started looking around me going, okay, why are there so many sick family units, and what's going on here? And just asking those questions. And as I was in grad school and I started to learn more and more, it was like that can of worms that you open. And now I'm on this, you know, deep dive into functional medicine and understanding cellular function and how to heal on a cellular level. And it wasn't until I was in clinical rotations for my nurse practitioner degree that I finally realized that, you know, I was starting to treat these people for Lyme disease at a functional medicine clinic I was at. And I was like, a lot of these pieces seem to fit my life. And so then I tested and I ended up testing positive, and it was just kind of eye-opening. And since then, have been able to get myself into a really phenomenal situation and remission and feeling great, feeling better than I've ever felt. So that was kind of the path of, okay, I figured out how to heal myself from this. And now I need to use this gift and these tools to be able to help other people, because there's not nearly enough support, knowledge, understanding in the medical community.
Sure. Wow. So that's an amazing story that you think from a child that you had this, that, that you had all these kind of random symptoms that didn't really make sense.
Yeah.
And then you started connecting the dots when you were treating patients, which is amazing. And so how long did it take you to heal?
You know, that's a little bit of a tough question, because I was already on that path of, okay, I'm going to change my diet and my lifestyle. Now I'm going to heal my gut. So I was going through some of those steps that are kind of necessary precursors anyway. But I would say once I started really targeting the Lyme itself, it probably took me about 18 months to really get into a good remission state. But I had been working maybe for 2 to 3 years before that to start improving my health. So...
Gotcha. So this leads to this great question. How do conventional and functional medicine differ when treating Lyme disease?
That's a great question. So I will say functional medicine as a whole, I wouldn't necessarily say all functional medicine understands Lyme to the depths that it should. So functional medicine and then a further training, something like ILADS, et cetera, to really be Lyme literate and really truly understand the infection. But I have seen, when it comes to Western medicine, I've seen all sorts of things. I've seen doctors tell people, oh, that bullseye rash is just because of the tick bite. It doesn't mean you have an infection. You don't need to be treated. I've seen them put people on 24 hours of antibiotics. I've seen them put people on 3 days of antibiotics. I've seen some who are a little bit more knowledgeable who will maybe do like 2 weeks of doxycycline. But you look at the ILADS guidelines, and nowadays we're recommending a minimum of 6 weeks of antibiotics. And oftentimes you need multiple antibiotics because we need to hit the infection in multiple approaches. And we also need to hit the infection for a duration of time that's going to kind of cut off its ability to continue to reproduce. So usually it's at least 6 weeks and it's multiple. And that's if you catch it early. If it's chronic, it's a different story. If it's chronic, Western medicine is for the 95% of the time not even going to acknowledge that. Whereas in the functional world, it's then it becomes more of an approach of figuring out is how active is the infection? What else has been damaged? What do we maybe have to heal before we can hit the infection? And then is your body going to do better with herbs or antibiotics or a mixture of both? So it becomes more nuanced once the infection is chronic.
Wow, that actually piqued my interest in asking you. There are the people that know, because I've ran into lots of people that not even know that they had Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. And let's say, you know, like you, years later, I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling a little this, a little that. How would I know that's due to Lyme? How would I know that?
Yeah, that would have to be. So there are some, one of the tricky parts with the lab testing is that standard lab testing can have around a 50% false negative rate. So there are some more accurate tests that we can do to look for previous infection in your system. I usually tell people if they come to me with some of those complaints of pain, fatigue, brain fog, I tell them that we can either start with some of the more low-hanging fruit, non-invasive things. Let's start by healing your gut. Let's do some detox. Let's optimize your micronutrients and your lifestyle. And then if we're still not getting to where we want to be, then let's test for something more serious like Lyme. Conversely, I get some of those people where they come to me and the fatigue is debilitating, the brain fog, the nerve pain, the muscle aches, the numbness and tingling, the tremors, the cardiac symptoms. I mean, you name it. And in those patients, I just go right to, let's uncover everything right away so that we really have the whole picture and we can figure out if we need to hit that infection harder from the get-go.
I mean, something that you said that is very concerning to me is that conventional medicine is treating this all different ways. And you're saying, you know, if you have Lyme, you should really be on doxycycline for, you're saying 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like the most, like my doctor has prescribed for my son and stuff was like 2 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
So there's a huge discrepancy there. And how would you know if you cleared the Lyme? Like say you had, you know, how would you know?
It is tricky because Lyme bacteria can function in a lot of different ways. So sometimes the infection can go into a dormant state. So maybe you have killed what is active and circulating. And now whatever spirochetes, whatever little bacteria are still in there, they go into this dormant state and become these little cells that persist in your body. And they can live that way for a very long time. So you may find that, you know, 20, 30 years later, you go through something that alters your immune system, maybe childbirth or COVID or a car accident. And that trauma, that inflammation hits your immune system. And now these persister cells become active again. So there is no perfect test to tell us that Lyme is 100% cleared because you will always carry those antibodies. Your immune system will always have that memory. And so it can be very tricky. I use a combination of off of antimicrobials for 3 months, symptom free. Inflammatory markers in the labs have come back to normal. And that's kind of how I, and then also the like active infection, the IgM antibodies have converted to IgG, which are the past infection antibodies. So with those three things, I'll typically consider a patient to be in remission. I use the term remission because we're not at the point where we have cure for at least chronic Lyme disease. I have seen patients with acute infection who we treat with antibiotics for anywhere between 6 weeks and 3 months, and they never have a symptom again, and they're good to go. So I do think cure is possible in the very early stages of infection. But when we're talking about chronic infection, it's more of a term of remission.
Wow. And I will say, so my son first had Lyme when he was like four. Okay. And then again, he had it again a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And his first symptom the second time was like arthritic pain in the hands. Mm-hmm. Which that leads me to believe that yes, like this was already in him maybe, because the first time he had like fever, more traditional symptoms, but okay. The second time it was the arthritic hands. And then what was so bizarre is the first time he had Lyme at four, the bullseye broke out around his eye. And when it happened again, it broke out around the eye again, which is really weird. So it makes me think he probably, like you're saying, has this like in him.
Yes.
And that brings me to my other question. Could some people be more disposed to this? Like, because why, if all of us are living here in New Jersey and we don't all have all of us and he has it three times, like, is it something that maybe some people are more just prone to?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know if there's an element of like ticks are more attracted to blood types or things like that. I will say depending on genetic makeup and environmental exposures, that can certainly determine whether somebody contracts infection. So if your immune system is incredibly robust, sometimes your immune system can fight the infection and it will not become this prolonged thing. If someone comes to me and, you know, maybe they've either been living in a high stress situation for a couple of years, we know that suppresses their natural killer cells. If they've been exposed to mold toxicity in their home, we know that that suppresses their immune function. So there are some things that if, you know, if the immune system is not as robust as it should be, or if there's a certain combination of genetics that maybe don't allow the body to see toxin in the same way, those people can be more predisposed to ending up with chronic lingering symptoms from Lyme versus someone with a different genetic pattern or a more robust immune response.
Interesting. And then, so tell us a little bit about the mold thing. I've heard a lot of people say, I've had Lyme, I've had chronic Lyme. And then if I go in a moldy place, I have like a lot of issues. So,
yeah. So, mold, different types of toxic mold. I mean, there's mold everywhere, right? There's mold in our environment. But the way that building materials are being made these days, like the cheap drywalls that are basically made out of paper, they turn into food for mold. So, a lot of homes end up having easier problems with mold growth, and you don't always see it. You don't don't always know. It can definitely be a silent thing. A lot of people experience it in their workplace. You know, I treat a lot of teachers who are exposed to mold in the schools they work in, and it's just kind of like, well, what am I going to do? Quit my job? So the mold suppresses immune function. And when we think about these tick-borne infections, sometimes if the immune system is robust enough, it can keep things in place. But then you have this suppressed immune system. You have this exposure to the mold that's causing that suppressed immune system. And now you get that tick-borne infection, or it can be vice versa. You have the tick-borne infection first, and now you're exposed to toxic mold. Maybe your immune system was doing a good job, but now it becomes suppressed because of the mold exposure, and the Lyme infection can come to the surface and start to wreak havoc because of that. So then it becomes a more nuanced situation of, okay, we need to detox you and get these mold mycotoxins out of your system, but we also need to get you out of the exposure, which can sometimes be a very expensive, crazy path of, you know, I've had people straight up leave their home.
I was going to say, would you have to move? Yeah.
Some people, if the problem is bad enough, some people have had to leave all their things behind because their things are permeated with the mycotoxins. So I've seen that. That's not every person who's exposed to mold. A lot of times you can remediate and then detox and then cure the tick-borne infections. But, you know, that's, interestingly enough, I say that our family has really bad luck with vector-borne illnesses because it was 2020 and we had moved into a new home that we renovated, and my husband had been doing some work in our basement and was like, I don't know what's going on. I gained like 15 pounds in 2 or 3 months. And I was like, uh-oh, I think there's mold in the basement. So we tested, we remediated, he started to feel better, but he hadn't gotten all the way through that. And we were in Wisconsin and he must have gotten bit by a tick. We never saw the tick. We never saw a bullseye rash. But a week after we got home, all hell broke loose. Like, he went from being an athletic person looking to optimize his health, overnight woke up with full body tremors, nerve pain, hallucinations, chest pain, joint pain. Wow. I mean, wow. Anxiety attacks, like, he was a mess. And he had played football in college and he was like, this has got to be it. I'm going crazy. My brain, like all the concussions. And I was like, you're not getting off that easy. We were in Wisconsin last week. We're testing you. And he lit up for Lyme and Bartonella. And it was, we caught it right away. And it was 6 months of ozone therapy, herbs. He was on 4 oral antibiotics and 2 IV antibiotics. And that's what it took to get his symptoms under control.
Wow. And so that was a mold first. Mold exposure first. And then
exactly.
The tick.
Exactly.
And then how long after the tick did he get the symptoms?
For him, luckily, it was probably, I mean, we assume that that's where he got the tick bite because Wisconsin is kind of a hotbed. So it was about a week after we got home from that trip that, you know, he had kind of been tired that week. And then about a week later, everything just exploded.
Wow.
I was stuck when you said that he was down in the basement doing mm-hmm. some work. And in a matter of, I'm not sure what the time frame was, he gained, you said 15 pounds.
Yeah, it was about 2 to 3 weeks. And he's very dialed in with his diet and exercise and lifestyle. And so he was like, what would cause this?
But so it was just like, it was coming on, his weight was coming on little by little, mm-hmm. right? And then he's like, wow, I've gained 15 pounds. And you were like, oh, there must be mold in the basement. Like, that's not what I'm like.
Yeah, that's true. We would never think
you must
that.
Be eating French fries behind the scenes. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Unexplained weight gain is so often toxin related. I mean, it is so, people assume that weight problems are because you don't exercise and you eat crap. And for some people that's true, but for so many people, it's more hormones, toxins, poor gut health. But toxins are a big one. When someone tells me all of a sudden, the first question I have is, have you been in a new environment? Did you move? Are you in a new workplace? Have you been exposed to a new environment? And if the answer is yes, then we're going to dig for mold because mold causes weight gain very frequently.
Wow. That's something new to me. I had no idea. So I guess, could we talk a little bit about treatments then? We talked a little bit about, like, if you have acute Lyme, you get the bullseye, but you want to be on that doxycycline longer probably than most doctors are going to tell you.
Yeah. So with acute Lyme, honestly, it's somewhere between 40 I'm going to say around 40%, but the estimates are between 40 and 80% of people will see a bullseye rash. So this is part of the problem with acute Lyme is that a lot of people never see a rash. They never see a tick. So that's why it's missed.
Yeah. By the way, all three times with my son never saw a tick, which is crazy to me.
Wild. But yeah.
None of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And then everyone thinks that it has to be attached for 48 hours and it's just not true. It can bite you and fall off. It can bite you and go on its way. They can carry infection in their saliva. So it really doesn't take that full embedded 24 to 48 hours to transmit infection. So if you see the bullseye, if you know you've been exposed, the first thing you want to do is if that tick is embedded, you want to remove it at the head. Don't stress out the tick. Don't burn it. Don't use alcohol. That is more likely to cause it to release more infection. So you just want to use sharp tweezers, remove it at the head, make sure everything is out. You want to save the tick because there are a couple of companies you can send it to test it to see which infections the tick carries. Because when a person gets infection, it can take 4 to 6 weeks for antibodies to even show up. So sometimes we don't know which infections have been transmitted. So if you test the tick, it's about a 1 week turnaround, mm-hmm. and then you have a better idea. With conventional treatment, I always tell people, on the iLADS website, there is actually a handout for providers. If you're going to see your primary care or urgent care, bring that with you. I mean, I know some providers have a complex where they don't want to be told by their patient, but that lays out the guidelines of iLADS recommendation for treatment. So at that point, I usually will do doxycycline and some other combination, maybe azithromycin, because azithromycin is broad. When we think about tick bites, I always say Lyme is the popular infection, but ticks carry a whole bunch of infections, as you know, the ehrlichiosis, rickettsia, babesiosis, Bartonella. They can carry viruses like Powassan. There's so many crazy infections that they can carry. So oftentimes you'll contract more than just Lyme disease. Doxy can cover Ehrlichia and Lyme, and it can kind of hit Bartonella. But if you add the azithromycin and you have coverage of some of the more parasitic infections that ticks carry too. So usually I'll start maybe two antibiotics. Once we get the report back from the tick, sometimes we can change that based on which infections we're seeing. Some of that is symptoms based too. If someone's lighting up with either Bartonella or Babesia symptoms, then I will change treatment accordingly. But at a minimum, doxycycline for 6 weeks if you see that bullseye and you know that you've been exposed. With that, I also add all of the immune support that we can. So high doses of vitamin D. I use some herbs, like I'll use astragalus, andrographis, knotweed, cryptolepsis, skullcap, all sorts of things that can just help lighten the load. There's a homeopathic called Leadum that you can use to help with acute Lyme disease. So, and then any kind of, I like mushroom-based immune supports. I like immunoglobulins to help the body kind of increase its defenses. So I always put people on kind of a cocktail of immune support. I put them on some gut support, like a really good quality probiotic. And occasionally we'll need like some nystatin or something to prevent any yeast infections while they're on the antibiotics. So it is a little bit more nuanced. And this is where if you can get to a Lyme literate provider, you're going to be a lot more well off. But at the minimum, you want your provider giving you 6 weeks of doxy. Mm-hmm. Then when it becomes chronic, this type of infection, so Lyme acts kind of like a parasite in your system. It wants to survive and thrive. So it will do whatever it can to destruct the things that would hurt it. So it will over time suppress your body's immune function so that your immune system can't recognize it properly and can't mount the proper responses. It can damage your pituitary, your endocrine system, your thyroid, your hormones. It can damage a lot of things. So once it's become chronic, we kind of have to figure out, are there toxins associated like mold? Is your gut health robust? Do you have good lifestyle habits? If not, we want to start by kind of implementing those things to have a foundation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if someone is super damaged and we just throw a bunch of antibiotics at them, we're going to make them worse. So we want to establish a good foundation. And then at that point, you know, there's some data that suggests that once infection is chronic, then antibiotics are not a good idea or not helpful. Mm-hmm. Conversely, there's some data that shows that they are. I treat a lot based on the individual patient. I have certainly healed people with just herbs, peptides, ozone therapy, supplements. I've done it without antibiotics, but there are definitely some people who just really need the antibiotics. So then it becomes a little bit more of an art of of putting together which thing first and why. I healed my Lyme with no antibiotics, so it's definitely doable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, then it becomes usually either multiple herbs, multiple antibiotics, a couple of peptides, immune support supplements. So then usually it becomes a much bigger production of how we get that infection under control and then heal the associated systems that have been damaged.
And then for the chronic Lyme, what about, like, how are you figuring out that it's chronic Lyme, I guess? That's my other question.
Yes. So there are a few inflammatory markers that we can run that often will be depleted when there is a chronic Lyme infection. So we can look at some natural killer cells in the person's system. And if these natural killer cells are low, it can help us understand that these specific cells are targeted towards more tick-borne or like more chronic infection. So if those are low, that can be an indication that there's a chronic Lyme infection. There are a couple of tests. I really prefer the Igenex test. They've been around for a long time and a lot of their certification standards are very robust, I'll say. Like they've passed all of the tests that all of your Western medicine tests have to go through to prove that they're legit. So they typically are going to have a much higher sensitivity and specificity than your standard Western blot. So I'll run a full tick-borne panel through there to look at Lyme and all of the co-infections. And then if something comes back, even if the antibodies are old, like IgG antibodies, which are the ones that your body forms after an infection's been around a long time, if the patient has those antibodies and clinically they meet diagnosis, so they've got symptoms of Lyme and evidence of past infection, we know that this infection persists. We know that it comes up with all these survival mechanisms. So it's safe to say that if it hasn't been treated, it's likely still active. And then there's a questionnaire that we have too that kind of helps us formulate based on your score how likely it is that you have a tick-borne infection.
Okay. And is that the first thing you would do is take that test?
Yeah. Sometimes if a patient is hesitant on wanting to do the testing, then that can be a good first step. We do see pretty good insurance coverage with that particular Lyme test we do. So usually it's not too difficult to run
great.
The panel.
Yeah.
Because a few years ago, I had a tick bite. It was on the back of my leg. I have no idea how long it was there for, but I think it was pretty embedded. Mm-hmm. And one day I felt like an itch and then I felt it and I completely freaked out, called my kids. I'm like, oh my God. And they got it out. And I did take that because we have a mosquito, like commissionary place, mm-hmm. not far from where I, so I got it looked at to see like it had Lyme or whatever I did that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I paid whatever and they said it came back negative. Now, I don't know, like if they just tested to see if it had Lyme. Now I'm thinking like, what if it had one of these other things?
Yeah.
Right?
Have no
so
idea.
That's one thing. And then the other thing is when I hear you guys talking about the bullseye, because I think I had the bullseye. However, I was confused. I don't know if I had the bullseye or did I have a bullseye or was it because it was just swollen and it looked like that because when they took it out and maybe that's like the point of insertion. And maybe it got swollen and it looks like a bullseye. I just, you know, at the time, I'm trying to think, this was quite a few years ago.
Okay.
So now I'm like, okay, I have certain things that I do experience physically, but then I'm like, well, you know, I'm 57, menopause, like just like what you were saying before, like you might just be like, this is just, you know, part of life, right? Should I, you know, I don't know. I'm like, wow. As you're speaking, I'm like, I might need to investigate like what's going on with me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always better to know, right? And that is part of where the only true way to prevent chronic infection is to help educate people and get it out there and help people understand like what to do if you get a tick bite. How do you know if you have a bullseye rash? Should you treat? Should you not? Like all of that prevention, right? Because this is like the classic thing I see is I had this tick bite years ago and now I have all of these symptoms. They could be explained by XYZ, but maybe they're not. I always think it's worth testing just so that you know. And then from there, you can decide how aggressive you want to be about it. And it's always better to know.
Now, traditionally, if you went to your doctor, wouldn't they just run the Western blot? Like, is that just the basic?
Yeah.
And would chronic Lyme show up on that?
You may show antibodies. I'll say if you're lucky, you may show antibodies because remember, we talked about how Lyme suppresses the immune system. So over years and years and years of it trying to escape your immune system, sometimes you don't show those antibodies. It took me years years of, you know, I treated, but then it took probably another 3 to 4 years to actually show up as a CDC positive on my test results because of all of that immune system repair that I had to establish in order for my immune system to see it properly.
Wow.
So it was showing up positive on the Igenex test, but it wasn't showing up positive on a regular Western blot until about 3 or 4 years later.
So it sounds like if you're suspicious of this, you really want to go to a Lyme literate provider. Because if you just go the conventional route, you're probably not going to get too many answers unless it's very acute and obvious that you have Lyme.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess it's possible that tick that I sent to get tested, I mean, that was years ago. So that was like at least 5 years ago, if not more. They probably just tested that. Like when they said, oh, it came back negative, they probably just tested for Lyme.
Probably. That, unless you selected which infections you want it tested for, they probably just tested for Lyme. Mm.
Wow. Well, this is a very good conversation to be having and sharing with others, because this is like the ticks are everywhere. I mean, it's really, I feel like it's gotten so much worse. I mean, as a kid in New Jersey here, I played in the woods all the time. And now it's like, I don't even want my kids to go in the woods, which is really sad, actually.
I know. And then it's that internal balance of, you know, we live right next to the woods and it's this internal balance of nature is so good and you don't want to live in this like fear mongering state.
Right.
But yesterday my daughter sat down in a pile of like tall grass and weeds and I was like, don't. And then I stopped myself and I was like, she's a kid sitting in grass. Like,
I know.
Don't put that fear into her. Just chuck her when she stands up, you know?
Yeah. It's tough. Wow. I mean, because with my son, the three times, I'm definitely hesitant for him. I make sure he's well covered. Now, what about, I know some of the sprays are toxic. What's your thought on the spraying down and all that?
Yeah. So I have like layers of how protective to be based on what your exposure is. So if you're going to be hiking in the woods or walking through tall grasses, you want to be extra, or hunting or something like that, extra cautious. So permethrin spray is toxic, but is probably the only thing I have found to really actually kill the ticks on contact. Last year, we found like 5 ticks on our property and we kept them. And I may have experimented on them a little bit to see like which of my essential oils and which of these toxins actually work. So the permethrin is toxic. What I recommend is spraying your shoes, let those dry completely. And then you can spray like the socks and pants that you'd be wearing, you can actually wash them once they're dried with the permethrin and they will maintain that permethrin for I think like 6 washes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So you can do that. And then, you know, tucking the pants into your socks, being very mindful if you're going to truly be in like a high exposure. On your skin then you can use some, I really like the Wonderside tick spray, or you can use Picaridin. That's another one that's like not quite so toxic. And so I'll use that more for if my daughter's going to be outside playing, I use the Wonderside spray. It's a more natural spray. But if we're going to be in like a heavily wooded area, then the Picaridin and let it dry, at least on the shoes and socks. And then on the skin, you can use the more natural stuff.
And then wear a hat for your head and all that.
Yeah, ideally. And that's one of the most important places to check, because I've seen people who, you know, they find this tick engorged in their head and you miss it because of your hair. And so with my daughter, that's like the number one place I'm checking is inside her ears, behind her ears, and in her hair.
Wow, that was really helpful. So, being mindful of our time today, Katie, what is something a person can do today to prevent Lyme disease? And also, we would like to know what people can do if they think they might have Lyme.
Yes, great questions. Prevention-wise, the number one thing you can do is tick checks every single time you come in from outside. So yourself, your kids, your pets. A lot of people forget to check their pets and then they'll find a tick laying on their dog's bed. So tick checks and spraying, I think, are first and foremost, because that's really the only way to truly prevent disease. Mind you, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but some people will have 6 weeks of antibiotics even when they catch the infection acutely, and they still go on to have chronic problems. So the only way to truly, truly prevent is to catch things right away or prevent that bite from ever even happening.
When you mentioned spray, you said check every time you come in and then spray. Are you referring to like what you were talking about before? Or like spray your shoes, spray that.
Yeah, spray if you're going to be outside. So I guess it would be reversed. It would be spray and then check. But yeah, make sure you spray your kids, use, you know, whatever you feel most comfortable with. But if it's heavy exposures, then go with the heavier stuff.
And are we talking just like within the season of tick, or are we talking year round here?
Good question.
Great question. Depends on your climate.
And your area, probably, like depending on where you, like if you live in New York, maybe like.
Yeah, you know, it's tricky It's like I am vigilant like March through November. Honestly, I'm vigilant during those times. I'm less vigilant in like December, January, February. It gets pretty cold here, but we do have random times where, you know, the weather will kick up a little bit and the ticks can kind of get more active during that time. I mean, gosh, I have some patients. I have one that I'm thinking of right now. She go to camp in, it was January maybe, and she was in Wisconsin. So you wouldn't expect there to be, but woke up the next day with fever and symptoms, and things have been just a wild ride since then. So the best practice will be year round, but I would say I'm much more vigilant during like the warmer seasons. Mm-hmm. And then as for what can you do if you suspect you have Lyme disease, the ILADS, the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, their website is ILADS.org, and they do have a directory there where you can search your area and find the closest Lyme literate providers to you. I think that's the best resource because you just cut, you're not messing around, you're not getting tossed around by different providers who maybe don't really quite know what they're doing with this stuff. You're getting more direct answers. So I think that's the best place to start if you suspect that you may have a tick-borne infection.
Great. And I just want to be clear. And is that if you suspect you may have a tick-borne infection right away? But what if, like, for example, there's a listener like me that is just listening and saying like, okay, I haven't experienced anything as of recent, but I do remember this one time. Would that still be the same protocol or would I be doing something differently?
Yeah, that would be, you want to find a Lyme literate provider and you may not need to see them consistently, but they're going to lead you down that path of the proper testing to make sure you really get the answer that you're seeking.
All right, cool. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I just want to tell our audience that you can connect with Katie on Instagram. Her handle is @Katie_McManigle_NP, or you can connect with her at Peak_Health_Institute and on Facebook at Peak Health Institute. Thank you so much, Katie. This has been such an educational eye opener for me and I think Raquel too. So we appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. This is wonderful.
Thank you so much.
The information provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, curing, treating, or preventing any disease. We are functional medicine certified health coaches and not licensed medical professionals. The opinions and advice of guests are their own and also not considered to be medical advice. Always consult with a healthcare professional when making any healthy lifestyle changes. We would love to hear from you. Please leave a comment or review. Email us at info@functionalmoms.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button.